Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, thanks so much for joining me for Connecting Faith today. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and today we get to talk parenting. And not necessarily the sweet spot of parenting, where you get to sit back and admire the work you've put in to grow a well-functioning child, but the sweat equity parenting, the laying of a foundation to help your child make the kinds of choices and decisions that will reap benefits for both them, you, and hopefully others years down the road. And if you have what you consider to be a powerful child, well, our guest says that we all do. And this show, then, is for you. Let me introduce you to my guest, and we'll get started in the conversation. My guest today is Dr. Kevin Lehman. Dr. Lehman is an internationally known psychologist, radio and television personality, and speaker who has taught and entertained audiences worldwide with his common sense psychology. He's made house calls for hundreds of radio and television programs and has served as a contributing family psychologist to Good Morning America. A best-selling and award-winning author, Dr. Lehman has written more than 40 books about marriage and family issues, including The Birth Order Book, one of my favorites, Sheet Music, and Have a New Kid by Friday. Dr. Lehman and his wife, Sandy, live in Tucson, Arizona. They have 5 children and 2 grandchildren. And today we're going to chat about his recent book, Parenting Your Powerful Child. Welcome, Dr. Lehman.
Hey, it's nice to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I read in your intro that every family has a powerful child. So is that true? And is there always someone in the family who's kind of seeking to gain that position?
Well, it's in most families, there is a powerful child. There are some that don't, but those are parents who really pull this thing off called parenthood with a 5-star rating, which is pretty difficult to do. Because when you think about our way of rearing kids today, it's all steeped in tradition, authoritarian tradition, that says, I'm bigger than you are, I'm better than you are, I know more than you. And as people of faith, we know we take something like train up a child in the way he should go, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the interesting thing. If we gave our listeners an essay on that verse, the great, huge majority would flunk it cold.
Mm.
Because in the way he should go doesn't mean parent the way you think he should go. It speaks directly to the individual bent of each of your children. Now, as the guy who wrote the birth order book, I'm here to tell you that, you know, child number one hangs a left-hand turn and child number two is going to hang a right, or vice versa. Those first two kids in the family are going to be night and day different.
Sure.
And so when you talk about rearing kids, again, most of us grew up in an authoritarian home where parents said to kids things like, hey, listen, you're going to do what I tell you to do. You understand me? As long as you're living under this roof. You want something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about. You know, that's the authoritarian. Well, today we have all kinds of permissive parents, okay? And you walk 5 feet, you step on a permissive parent. And they're the ones that, you know, say things like, Melanie, it's 8 p.m. Have you chosen to go to bed yet?
Hmm.
So in those extremes, we produce rebellion. And the only way to rear a kid, the only godly way to rear a kid is to be the authoritative parent. And for those who question that, ask yourself the question, is God an authoritarian? Does God grab us by the scruff of the neck, twist our earlobe, and say, you will do this, you will do that? No, he doesn't. So The authoritative is that wonderful mid-mark between authoritarianism and permissiveness. So to get back to the powerful child, we are the power source for the powerful child. So if you have a powerful child in your home, friends, I got news for you. You don't have to look too far to find the power source. It's either you or your mate.
Hmm. What are some of those characteristics? How could we identify? I mean, we probably all know if we have one, what those are, but maybe you can explain to us what are some of those characteristics of powerful children.
Well, I appreciate that question because a lot of people confuse strong-willed child with powerful child. Now, again, you know, I've reared five kids, and I want my kids to be strong-willed children.
Sure.
I want them all to be strong-willed because I want them to stand up for their beliefs and their convictions in life. And quite frankly, most of us, when we see strength in kids, we extinguish it. The powerful child, by the way, here's the big difference. This kid has an agenda. This is the kid that has to have the last word in everything. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You could say that the sky is blue. The powerful child will say, no, it's aqua. I mean, they will find a way to do battle with you. And these kids are stubborn. They'll take themselves down the drain of life just to show you that they're the boss. They can be rebellious. They can be shy. They can be quiet. I mean, most of us, when we think about a powerful child, we think about the kid who's slamming doors and, you know, just exhibiting power tantrums. But a lot of powerful kids are very sneaky, very quiet, very devious, and very dishonest.
Hmm. And their goal is what?
Well, the goal, you mean for the kid?
Yeah.
He's living on a life theme that says, I only count when I dominate, when I win, and when I control. Now, let me throw this out to you as well. Most of us rear kids like they're the center of the universe. And I just spoke up in Plymouth, Minnesota a few weeks ago, and we had a great time, as we always do at those seminars. But, you know, I'm always greeted with, oh, Dr. Lehman, we're so glad you're here because we too want happy, happy, happy children. And I always say, you know, I wrote a book, a New York Times bestseller called Have a New Kid by Friday. And in that book, I think the best line in it is this. It says, an unhappy child is a healthy child. So sometimes your little Buford or little Fletcher has to be unhappy. There's nothing wrong with him being unhappy. He deserves to be unhappy, quite frankly. Why? Because he sported an attitude, he talked back, he stole something, he was dishonest, whatever the violation might be. So the goal of being a parent is not to create a happy, happy child. So if we get a parent at least off that track, we got a fighting chance at helping them rear a kid that's going to be a productive, useful citizen someday.
So why is it so important to kind of identify those powerful children early? What will happen if we don't?
Well, take a look around. Read the newspaper. I mean, you go out to a mall. You guys got, aren't you the city that's got the big, huge mall, right?
We have the big mall, yes.
Yeah, well, you go out to the mall. Here's a challenge from Dr. Kevin Lehman. Go to the mall, find one of those nice benches, and just sit there and watch. Watch kids with their parents. Within 10 minutes, you'll know why some mothers eat their young.
Mm.
These kids are out of control. They're demanding. They're hedonistic. And by the way, for those parents who tend to rear their kid like they are the most special creature in the whole world, let me ask you this. If you bring your kid up to feel like they're the center of the universe, where's room for Almighty God in the kid's life?
Mm.
There's none. Zero. Zilch. Nada. So to me, it makes all kinds of sense. I've been doing this for years. And I have to tell you, I mean, if you want to get inside my head, I chuckle at some of these books I read about rearing kids. Oh, my goodness. I'm not even close.
Well, you say that you were a powerful child as well. Tell me more about that.
Well, this gets a little bit into birth order. I had a sister who was perfect. She was a pastor, a children's pastor. Perfectionist, straight A's. I mean, she put a newspaper under the cuckoo clock. I never understood that one. I mean, she was just over the top in so many ways. She was a great sister. She loved her little brothers. But I'm not lying. She never got a B in her life in anything. And then there was my brother, who was the quarterback of the football team. He was John Jr., but we called him Jack. And Jack was voted best looking in his class. He was a great student as well. And then I came along, the baby of the family. Now, I've done my own shrinking, okay? I've shrunk myself on this one. And I couldn't compete with those little blue birds. that were doing so well. So I became the best at being the worst. I graduated fourth in my class, but unfortunately was fourth in the bottom and not fourth in the top.
Hmm.
So I couldn't get in college. Our own church denominational school, they even turned me down. I sent them scripture about forgiveness. They weren't impressed. And 9 days before semester, I got admitted on probation. So what was little Kevin Lehman all about? Kevin Lehman was all about, I'll be the best at being the worst. I was an attention getter, a class clown. You know, I do all those shows in New York City, all the Good Morning America and Fox and Friends and all those shows. And, you know, I'm old. I'm a grandpa now. But I'll still wear my wild socks. When I walk into the studio, even the cameraman says, hey, Doc, let's see your socks today. Well, where does that come from? It comes from the thought as a kid that I only counted in life when I got other people's attention. So I worked this out in my head years ago, you know, that having a sense of humor is also a gift from God. As long as you use that humor in the right way, that can be a great teaching method. I just spoke at Liberty University just a couple days ago, and 12,000 students in the round in their big arena there. And it was so much fun just for me to hear that place just roll on the floor laughing as I taught them the truth about life. So, again, wherever you are in the family, whether you're the firstborn, the middle child, the baby of the family, whatever, maybe you're a lonely only, you do have a lifestyle. Now, I'm not talking about the kind of car you drive and what house you live in, but how do you perceive life and how do you see yourself in relationship to all these other people in your family? So we really learn to be the powerful child or the attention getter or the victim or the martyr. And we tend to live those themes out in our life like it was the gospel truth. And obviously it's not the gospel truth.
So do you see powerful children or attention seeking children at every place in the birth order? Or do they typically fall in one area or another?
Well, again, I like your questions. Well, your basic truth is this, that your firstborn, the first one out of the chute of life, has a choice. And all kids are attention getters. The question is, do they get attention in a positive way or a negative way? So if the kid gets attention in a positive way, and again, what's the first proving ground in life? It's school.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that firstborn children are voracious readers. Laterborns would much rather read people than read books.
Mm.
You know, they're higher on the social skills. But intelligence tests, any kind of measure of intelligence, grades, achievement, firstborns win. So the firstborn gets their first shot. Now, this is how interesting it is. I think it's interesting. You tell me if this is interesting.
Okay.
Your stereotypical firstborn is your achiever, likes things done just so, responsible, you know, a little adult by age 7 or 8. Now, place a parent in that home who has a critical spirit. A parent who could spot a flaw at 50 paces. A kid that's always shooting on their kids, saying, you should do this, you should do that. Nothing is ever good enough. Well, that spawns a child that is critical of themselves. They become procrastinators. They never get the way they say they're going to be. They're always going to hit the home run, and they don't. They become messies. They got piles in their home, at school, on their desk. They live in piles. They live in disorganization. And one of the reasons why they do that is they fear that they always have to measure up and be perfect. So they develop a lifestyle, a way of living that reflects, I can't handle that pressure, which sets up some very interesting scenarios. Where the firstborn, who's usually the achiever, underachieves, if there's a child behind him within 2 years especially, many times that second child will leapfrog over the firstborn and become more like a firstborn personality. So, again, kids sort of, they live out this life theme. And for the parent that's got a powerful child, what you have to owe up to, parent, is that you've trained this kid to be powerful. And we do it without even thinking how it happens. Let me give you an example of that. For all you young parents listening, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Little 18-month-old little Fletcher is about to have his breakfast, and Dad tries to put little Fletcher in the high chair. Now, this kid at 18 months can contort his body in such a way that it's almost physically impossible to get this kid in the high chair.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom sees what's going on. She says, Roger, Roger, just give me Fletcher. Give me Fletcher. I'll take him, honey. And so she takes little Fletcher, sits him on her lap, and proceeds to feed the little guy. He's only 18 months of age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you be Fletcher for just a second. Would you rather sit on Mommy's warm lap and be spoon-fed, or would you rather sit in the cheap chair they bought at Walmart?
I think I'm going to choose Mommy's lap.
So we teach the kid. Now, he just had a little temper tantrum trying to show you he didn't want to go there. And we ended up paying him off without even knowing we paid him off.
Hmm.
And that's why I say that what parents have to understand, and I'll tell you, I'm vain enough to read my own reviews. I shouldn't say my reviews, the book reviews on the internet for books like Parenting Your Powerful Child. And parents love the book. I think it's really been a good little book for parents to understand that the role of the Christian parent is not to be powerful back.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be in that healthy authority and keep the tennis ball life on the kid's side of the court and do everything we can to promote responsibility. And it's sort of fun to see parents figure out that there's some simple ways that you can help turn these kids around rather quickly. And that's always been my prayer, that we could help people quickly and efficiently to turn relationships around.
Well, Dr. Lehman, we have to take a quick break, but I'd love to get to a couple of those specifics on how parents can turn that around for their children and for raising their children. So we'll take a quick break and be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. So great to have you with us today. We're talking parenting today with Dr. Kevin Lehman. He's written over 40 books on parenting and marriage. And today we're talking about Parenting Your Powerful Child, Bringing an End to the Everyday Battles. So if you have some battles with your children, Dr. Lehman, you've said that as I was reading your book, there were some scenarios on what you should say and what you shouldn't say when confronted with what you would call a battle. Can you give us one of those scenarios so we can have some tips as parents as to how to kind of manage our powerful children?
Oh, yeah. I give you a few things to think about.
Yes.
Number one, you got to remember that fighting is an act of cooperation. Now, whether you're fighting with your husband, ladies, or with your wife, gentlemen, or with your kids, it takes two to tango. So you have to understand that when you decide that you're going to sort of psychologically rub your kid's nose in it, so to speak, you can't say that to me. I am your mother. As soon as you go down that hallway of life, you're in trouble because you're throwing kerosene on the fire. So even when when kids say something really stupid, and they're very capable of doing exactly that, rather than correct them, you know, you can say, you know, you could be right, and walk away. One of the things that I love about Parenting Your Powerful Child is a suggestion not to ask your kids questions. And parents just do a double take when they hear that, and they go, what do you mean don't ask your kids questions? You got to ask your kids questions. No, you really don't. And if this is my challenge, okay, if you have a kid that you really have a relationship with that you're not happy with, try this. They always say, don't try this at home. I'm telling you, try this at home. get yourself out of the habit of asking your kids questions. Well, I can hear someone right now saying, excuse me, Dr. Lehman, I think it's very important. You know, when my daughter comes home from school, I always ask her, honey, how was your day at school? Okay, let's go through that charade. Honey, how was your day at school? Fine. What'd you do in school today? Nothing. Teenager, where you been? Out. What'd you do? Nothing. If you want to ask questions, go ahead. Now, this is interesting, because if a kid says something and it piques your interest, you can say to a child, tell me more about that. Now, I think this is funny, because tell me more about that, when you think about it, is a command. But it doesn't put the defenses up. And by the way, all you ladies that are listening, I wrote a wonderful little book called Have a New Husband by Friday, and I point out that the same principles that work with kids work with husbands. And husbands, for the record, basically don't like questions. And we hate the why word. It just shuts us down. So if you want your kid to talk to you and you want the relationship to turn around, start by simply not asking your kids any questions. And it's an eye-opener. I mean, I read these emails from parents and said, I can't believe it. I mean, you know, it's been 48 hours, Lehman, and I've got a new kid on my hands. Well, why? Because we've gotten out of the paradigm where we do all the questioning and they throw us a bone, a grunt answer or two, and we get no place. And so with powerful children, when they really misbehave and do things and have an attitude, you know, someone once said that if you want effective discipline, it has to be right away. Well, that's another lie. That's not true. Because for the 17-year-old who's got an attitude, and he was supposed to clean the garage and on Saturday, and here we are Saturday, and it's not cleaned, what do you do? Do you do what most parents do and remind and coax and bribe? Or do you wait till that night at 6 o'clock when he just can't find the car keys anywhere? And finally you say to him, honey, you're not going to find the keys are here in my pocket. Well, Mom, give them to me. I got to go. I got a date. I've got to do this. I got to do that. Honey, the car's not going anywhere, neither are you. You were going to clean the garage today, but I see you didn't touch it. Now, there's no warnings in this system, by the way. Warnings are a disrespectful act. Now, is this kid going to be happy? No, he's going to be very unhappy. He'll promise you anything. He'll clean the garage tomorrow. He'll paint the garage. I'll pull weeds for life. I'll shovel all driveways next winter. he'll promise you, just give me the keys to the car. And that's what I call sticking to your guns without shooting yourself in the foot. So, again, you either place yourself an authority parent or you don't. Now, the permissive parent says, all right, now I'm going to let you take the car tonight, but I don't want to have to tell you again. There's the permissive parent. The authoritarian parent blows up at him, tells him he's untrustworthy, I can never depend upon you, and you really go after him personally, only to damage the relationship further. The parent I want to produce goes through the scenario we just talked about.
I'd love to know more about the authoritative and the permissive parent and whether or not we actually become kind of the parent that we had. We need to take a little bit of a break. We'll come right back. We're going to talk about that, Dr. Lehman. Great advice from Dr. Kevin Lehman. We're talking about his book, Parenting Your Powerful Child, Bringing an End to the Everyday Battles. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're talking with Dr. Kevin Lehman, author of Parenting Your Powerful Child and many other books on parenting, marriage, and family issues. Dr. Lehman, you kind of talk about that permissive and authoritative and authoritarian parent. Do people tend to become parents that they had?
Yes, we do. You know, what is the one thing your parents said to you that you told yourself, when I have children, I will never say that to my children? Not only do you say it, but you say it with the same tone and inflection that your parents said it.
Mm.
Our daughter, who now has two little ones, she called my wife one day and she said, "Mom, I got to tell you something funny. I think I'm becoming you." I said to Dennis, her husband, "Honey, why don't we take a ride today in the car?" She said, "As a kid, I always hated a ride in the car. And now I'm saying to my husband, let's go for a ride in the car." Isn't that true? Parents, I got news for you. We do imprint our kids. And the question is, it's an indelible imprint on your kids, but is it a positive one or a negative one? And that's the goal, to be as positive as you possibly can be. And yes, you're going to blow it, just like I did at the breakfast table that day. But a reminder, you never look bigger in your kids' eyes than when you say, "Hey, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Would you forgive me?"
Mm. I used to keep a journal that says, "What not to do when I'm the mother." I was a terrible, terrible teenager. I still have it, but now I look at it and I kind of laugh now that I am a mother and look at these things. And there was a little bit of wisdom, but many of them were just the rantings of a teenager.
Now, how many kids do you have?
I have two, and I don't have any daughters. So God knew. God knew.
Oh, you've got sons.
I didn't.
You ever read What a Difference a Mommy Makes?
Yes. You know, love that. Book. I love that book.
You know, the best chapter in that little book is what I call it. Planning Your Toddler's Wedding. And when a young mom reads that, I go, wait a minute, planning my toddler's wedding? What are you talking about, Lehman? And I'm saying to moms like yourself, hey, be careful, because you represent all of womanhood to your son. And that's why you don't take any guff from little Buford, ever. And you're doing your future daughter-in-law a great service by what? By just standing your ground and not letting him dish you in any way, shape, or form. And see, and that's what a godly mom does, I think.
Well, I also sometimes giggle at how my older brother and I took what my mother said to us in very different ways. My older brother and I had this great conversation, I don't know, a couple of summers ago when he was talking about how my mother was always so encouraging to him, taught him how to throw a ball and how to run and how to do this and that. And I said, I had that same mom, but I thought that when she said those things, she was being very critical. And that must have something to do with our birth order or our personalities.
Well, it does, but it also points out that, you know, Big Brother was her little baby cub. That's her boy. And one of the things I've learned and you've experienced as a mom of two sons, that the special relationships in families are between moms and sons, dads and daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to highlight that because everybody knows that, you know, dad and son relationship is important. Everybody knows that mom and daughter, but the real psychological punch is that opposite sex relationship, because you do represent the other gender to your son or to your daughter.
Absolutely. I would concur with that, just knowing the relationships within my own family and experiencing that, dads and daughters, mothers and sons. Well, your book also offers just some great things that we could say in order to kind of right the wrongs that maybe we've already created. There may be people listening who are like, "Oh, I've already said the wrong thing. What do I do now?" What advice can you give to those parents?
Well, sometimes when you're in the precipice of life and the relationship is really to the point where you wonder if it's a relationship, I think sometimes you sit down and you write your son or daughter a letter. Now, this might be someone who's in college. It might be someone who has kids already. They're growing up, and you look at the relationship and you realize that maybe you were one of those parents that tried to micromanage. You know, I think sometimes just writing it down and putting it in black and white, an apology that, you know, looking back, I wish I would have done things a lot different. My experience has been that kids are very resilient, and they're also very forgiving, that when a parent owes up to some things, that's a good thing. Again, I wouldn't look for trouble. You avoid comparisons at all time. Treat your kids differently. Watch that little rudder in that mouth, that little tongue. It gets us into all kinds of trouble. If you get in a situation where you don't know what to say, say nothing until you utter these words. "Well, honey, Let me think that through. I want to make sure I respond to this in a good way. And speaking of responding, if you can just learn to respond rather than react, you're on second base. Mm-hmm. I mean, if your doc says, hey, you had a reaction to the medication, that's not a good thing. But if your doc says, hey, you responded to the medication, that's a very good thing. Now, if that simple analogy will help you remember, parent, to learn to respond rather than just react, you're going to get along better with all of those people that you live with. Trust me, that's a huge one. Learn to respond and not react.
Reacting seems to be more of a when you say something that you wish you hadn't said. Correct?
Yeah, it brings the worst out of us. I mean, I love St. Paul. He said such great things, but, you know, he calls himself wretched. Hmm. Well, if St. Paul is wretched, please tell me what you and I are. Do you know how many schools and churches are named after St. Paul? In Minnesota, we've got a city named after the guy. But anyway, I digress. The point is that we're all flawed to the core. We're pretty imperfect people. When I spoke this week over at Liberty University, I told the kids, I said, you know, in studying God's Word, I found these really stupid people. Hmm. I said, some people refer to them as the disciples. And they didn't get it because they walked and talked with Jesus. They saw him perform miracles before their very eyes. And yet they fell short. And in John 14, where Jesus gathers them all together and says, hey, fellas, I'm out of here. I'm going to prepare a place for you. What happens? Thomas steps up and says, Lord, we have the foggiest idea where you're going. Hmm. And then what I love about Philip, Philip is just dumb as mud. And he says, show us the Father, and then we'll know. And mm-hmm. Jesus says, Philip, after all this time you've been with me, you don't know who I am. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So if you ever feel, parent, like you don't measure up, like you're a big failure, guess what? You're in pretty good company, aren't you?
Mm. You know, I've had many jobs and roles in my life. I don't think there's one that has ever brought me to tears and brought me to God more than how ill-equipped I feel as a parent.
Well, yeah, there's nights you want to UPS them to a far-off land.
I mean, not them, just me. I'd like to UPS me to a far-off land.
Well, yeah, that's even better, you know. I think moms have this little something inside that says, where do I go to resign? Let me sign that bill right now. I'm out of here.
It's just the pressure. It's a pressure that I feel.
Here's a word picture. I want you to picture this. I want you to picture a woman juggling. And she's juggling five oranges. Can you see that, Mom, getting those five oranges going? Do you see how fast those arms have to go to get those five? Now watch her husband, Ralph, juggle. Notice the one orange in his hand. As he throws it up and he catches it. He throws it up and he catches it. There's tremendous differences how men and women function. And in the American home, women, I call women Velcro women. Because everybody wants a piece of them. Everybody. Mm. And 79% of women today who have kids under the age of 18, guess what? They're in the workplace. So they're bringing home the bacon. But they're also frying the bacon. Because when she comes home, she's got a whole other job waiting for her. So, you know, I don't mean to make light of this, but I'm just saying this is the world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. So parents, I'm telling you, you need to be an authority over your kids. And if you do fulfill that role, your life's going to be better. Your husband's life's going to be better. If you're a single mom, wow, you've got to nail this one. If you're a single dad, you have to nail this one because you need to really work at being consistent in all things and not let guilt run your life.
So does what's going on in our culture have something to do, Dr. Lehman, with why you chose to write this book now?
Yes.
What is it that's going on?
Do you know what number book this is by chance?
Well, it's 40-something.
Yeah, it's 45. Now, you're talking to a guy that graduated fourth in Bonavista's class, was taking consumer's mathematics as a senior, final exam question, Nancy went to the store to buy four apples. She had a dollar, came home with 50 cents. How much were the apples? I mean, you talk about dumb as mud. I was dumb as mud, but I was also spiritually dumb as mud. Didn't become a Christian until I was 21 years of age. And, you know, God capable of changing situations, changing lives. And I mean, if someone told me when I was a senior in high school that I was going to be on Phil Donahue, Oprah Winfrey, you name it, share the podium with people like Bill Cosby, I mean, come on, give me a break. I mean, you're in la-la land. But see, that initial decision that I made to follow Christ as a kid, young man, 21, but look what happens. People's lives can change. So those parents who are wondering, when is this kid going to turn around? You know, my mother, God rest her soul, lived to be 95, and she saw a few things her youngest son did in life. And when the high school that barely pushed me out the door brought me back and gave me a Wall of Fame award or something, whatever they called it. And one of the highlights of my entire life was driving an hour and a half in the car with my mom. And I said to her, I said, hey, Mom, we fooled a few people, didn't we?
Hmm.
And she said, oh, honey, I am so proud of you. I said, remember the night the cops brought me home? She said, oh, I do. But you were such a good boy. And all I could think of was Romans 8:39. It says, nothing separates you from the love of Christ. And so you got to remember, parents, even though there's times you want to FedEx these kids to a far-off land, or you'd like to kill them with your bare hands. I mean, the kids can do things that just infuriate you. You have to be in here for the big haul, the long haul, and realize that you, more than any other entity, is going to make a difference in your kid's life.
Hmm. That's why I feel the pressure. Probably. Well, we're talking today with Dr. Kevin Lehman. We have to take a quick break right now. We're talking about parenting your powerful child, among other things. Dr. Lehman is an expert on all things family as well as marriage and family issues. So we'll chat more with him about parenting that powerful child, maybe talking about some everyday battles and how maybe not to set up your children. We'll talk about that as we come back. Today, we're talking with Dr. Kevin Lehman. He is the author of Parenting Your Powerful Child, among many other books on marriage, family, and parenting. And we've been talking about these powerful children that exist in our family. But Dr. Lehman, there you have one chapter about the quiet, shy, sensitive, walk on eggshells manipulator. We tend to think that that powerful child is somehow the loud child, but you say that they can also be quiet and shy and they're manipulating you the whole time. Tell me more about that.
I do. Show me a shy child, and I'll show you a powerful little buzzard. You know, and again, think of you, those of us who are married, if you feel like you have to walk on eggshells around your husband or your wife, or they're going to explode, okay? And that's what they do. These people have tempers. And what they do is they keep it inside, and then something goes wrong, and then all of a sudden there's this big explosion. And that's what you have with some of these kids who are very shy. And you have these manipulative kids who play the poor me game, and many of them are babies of the family. You know, life's unfair. How come he gets this and she gets that? And I don't get that. Again, a suggestion, treat your kids differently. The state of Minnesota is going to treat your kids differently. The 16-year-old is driving, and a 13-year-old is wishing, and the 10-year-old is dreaming. So don't be afraid to treat your kids differently. And again, I just want to remind people, does God treat us all differently? Of course he does. Did he make us all differently? Of course he did. Twins. Identical twins have the same DNA. They're genetically the same person. When I found this out, it sort of freaked me out that with his infinite wisdom, for whatever reason, he decided to give identical twins different fingerprints. Well, why? To help the state police of Minnesota or the FBI? No, it's his way of saying, you are my son, you are my daughter, you're different than anybody else. So these kids, the hard ones to spot, powerful children, are cunning, they are manipulative, they can be very shy, they can set you up to do battle, and lots of times they win just because they're so smart. And they tend to be, like I say, toward the latter end of the birth order. They're usually not on top. Usually the one that's on top, if that kid's powerful, tends to be the explosive, throw-the-temper-tantrum type person. And by the way, for those parents that have young kids who insist on throwing temper tantrums on the floor at the mall, step over the child. There's a great temptation to step on the child, and that is illegal. Step over the child and walk away. And just remember that what that little kid is saying is this. He is saying by way of his power tantrum, you're going to do what I ask you to do, and I want that candy treat now. And a guy named St. Paul said, hey, children, obey your parents. It's the right thing to do because God has placed them in what? In authority over you. So your job is to gravitate toward the authoritative and not fall prey to the authoritarian. But your first reaction will be to be an authoritarian, but it's not healthy for you or your family.
I have to tell you, I walked away from my two-year-old when he had a temper tantrum in a store over a train he wanted. And then I just went and watched him from a ways away where he couldn't see me, but I could see him. And I tell you, he never did that again. It was amazing.
Yeah. You know, that's a suggestion right out of my book, because
I'm sure it was your book that I read.
I think that's probably in Making Children Mind Without Losing Yours, which is an old book, but one that sold over a million copies. But, you know, for parents, I tell you, if you got a youngster like that who's powerful, you step over and walk away and then duck out of sight. And if it's a grocery store, there's a two-year-old walking around, two-and-a-half-year-old. You know, the assistant manager of the veggie department notices and goes to pick up this little guy. And he'll scream like a stuck pig. And then you come around the corner, and those little arms are outstretched saying, Mama, Mama. Well, what do you say to the kid? Honey, it's really important you stay close to Mommy. So you train a child a little bit like you would a puppy. I always get in trouble when I say that. But there are some similarities with how we rear a puppy and how to rear a good kid. And you got to take time for training.
Hmm. You say that one of the ways to end those everyday battles, whether they're verbal or whether they're tantrums, is to not set up your child. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you know your kid stole something or your kid lied or whatever, don't start with a question. Did you take money from Mom's purse? I mean, that just sets up a battle. It is so important just to say things like, honey, I saw you take money from Mom's purse. We need to talk about this. So you're direct and matter of fact, a little teaching about where you keep your hands, and your hands do not belong in Mommy's purse ever. That's Mommy's personal property. And you begin to teach kids guidelines, because kids are hedonistic little suckers. At age 2 and 3, they want everything. Why do you suppose the people in the supermarkets put all that gum and candy at the checkout counter? And lots of times stuff is at eye level for kids, you know, toys and, you know, candies and all the things that they know that kids are going to want. So realize that there's a conspiracy out there. Be parents today, you got to be pretty smart.
Yes. You also say that we can make things a teachable moment. For me in my life, I've found that requires an incredible amount of patience. It's more along that reaction, don't react, but respond. And it seems like teachable moments require response.
They do. And the kid that you yell every morning, you're his human alarm clock. You tell him, John Andrew, you have 22 minutes to be on that school bus. I am not going to call you again. Well, you already called him 3 times.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, teachable moment, without warning, you know, tomorrow, don't wake him up for school. And the reason is because this kid needs a teachable moment. And when he wakes up at 9:30 and realizes he's late for school, and, yeah, he's going to be mad. It's going to be your fault. You're not going to fall for that. You're going to say, honey, I'd be more than happy to drive you down to school. And people are thinking, Lehman, this is a huge inconvenience. But let me tell you something. Having children is a huge inconvenience. But here's the fun part. While he's getting ready, call school. Ask with the assistant principal. Say, hey, would you mind hauling my kid in today and impressing on him how important it is to be on time?
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the fun part. Write a note. Dear principal, dear teacher, Buford has absolutely no reason to be late today to school. He chose to sleep in. Feel free to do whatever you do to kids who are legally tardy. Love, Mom.
Hmm.
And what have you done? You put the tennis ball life back on his side of the court, Yeah, he's not going to be happy, but it is a teachable moment. And you want life to be a series of teachable moments for your kids.
I remember walking to school when I had overslept. So my mom did use that as an example of if you oversleep, you still need to walk to school. I mean, that was what we did every day. She wasn't punishing me or anything, but yeah. I did learn that day that it's my responsibility to get up and to get out there on the right time so that I can get to school on time.
You know how things have changed. I walk to school too, and today in school districts, you can be a block from the school, and if you want the school bus to pick you up, they will pick you up.
Yes.
That's crazy.
That is true.
Don't get me going on that.
I won't. Well, you also talk about grace-based parenting, and I feel like there's a book on that as well. Can you explain more about what it means to be a grace-based parent?
Well, have you ever wondered why grace is so abundant? Could it possibly be because we need it?
Yeah.
Because we make fools of ourselves a lot as parents. We say stupid and dumb things. And, you know, I think you got to cut your kids some slack, you know, and we love to open up the wound and pour guilt in there and making kids feel guilty. And, you know, God is watching you and Jesus sees everything you know, I'd tuck those things in your back pocket and forget about them, friends. I think it's fun to tell stories to kids at night. Kids love stories and they love personal stories about yourself as a kid. And I call this establishing equality between the parent and the child. I know when our kids were little, I used to tell them stories about how Daddy used to get in trouble. I just put on my Facebook the other day my report card from my freshman year of high school.
Hmm.
I'm telling you, it's hilarious. I mean, in 1 6-week period, I passed nothing.
Oh, no.
Nothing. And I got a 22 as a final exam grade in algebra.
Oh.
I mean, I remember my youngest daughter, bringing her math paper home, and I was looking at her homework, and I looked down, and I said, Shazam, when they start using letters. I mean, it was way beyond me. But, you know, I think you want to be a good parent. And if you're a good parent, here's my promise. You got a great shot at creating a great kid. Just be a good parent. And a good parent is not a perfect parent. You're going to blow it from time to time, but that's what God's grace is all about. You have to cut that slack and extend grace to your kids.
Mm. I do love to use the line with my kids that we are a family that forgives. And I used that so often, I think, when they were little, if they'd done something wrong or I'd done something wrong, that I got that thrown back at me at one point in time when my 5-year-old did something that seemed unforgivable at the time. And he just came to me and he said, Mommy, I know we're a family that forgives, right? And then told me what he did.
Yeah, that was a smart little kid.
Yes, unfortunately.
He's going to get out there up front, yeah.
Yes, it was great. Well, Dr. Lehman, I have so appreciated having this chat with you about parenting your powerful child. And if we all do have one, then certainly we will utilize all of that advice. If you'd like to learn more about his book, Parenting Your Powerful Child, you can get it anywhere where books are sold. And Dr. Lehman, you also said you have a cruise that's coming up, and I'd love for you to tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, and this is a wonderful, maybe a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We do a cruise every year. Next year, it's February 22nd through March 1. You can imagine what it's going to be like in Minnesota in February. And Luis Palau is joining me. Luis is one of the world's best Bible teachers ever and one of the funniest people in life. Dennis Swanberg, who does imitations and impressions of people. He does Billy Graham better than Billy Graham ever did Billy Graham. He does Bill Clinton better than Bill Clinton ever did Bill Clinton. And Cherry Kagi's coming along with us as well. We're on a brand new ship, Princess Regal, and it's through Templeton Tours out of Boone, North Carolina. But people can go on my website, which is birthorderguy.com, birthorderguy.com. And we'll have some information up there shortly. We just finalized all these plans, but I'm just terribly excited. And this will sell out. I guarantee you it'll be sold out in a couple months. Lots of times people don't even think about going on cruises till November, December. But this one is 5-star rated, and it's a wonderful opportunity to hang out with Luis Palau, who's a wonderful Bible teacher. He's going to do every morning. He's going to do a Bible study. He's going to speak at night. I'll speak at night as well. If you're a fun person, we'd love to have you join us. And as I say in churches, like I just did up in Plymouth, Minnesota, if you're not a fun person, we'd prefer you stay home, quite frankly. But if you believe that Christians ought to be joyful and have great experiences, you come on our cruise. It's on the Princess Regal, a brand new boat. It's February 22nd through March 1, 2015.
And we will get that link up on our website as well so people can click on that. Absolutely, to get more information. Thanks so much again for joining me, Dr. Lehman. You've been listening to Connecting Faith. Have a great day.